I speak to you in the name of the God of the prophets. Amen.
Amen.
It was such an unexpected disclosure for my father. He had not often expressed his feelings easily or openly, so I was unprepared for the sudden overflowing of emotion that day. We were sitting around our kitchen table in the days after Christmas, just enjoying the visit from my parents, having coffee, finishing the leftover ham and fruit salad. By now, I've forgotten whether our conversation had a topic or not, but I don't remember what prompted the moment of disclosure. But my father began to talk about a trip my grandfather had taken with my parents not long before Granddaddy died. On this trip, everybody had to walk long distances, and Granddaddy did well most of the time. But one night, he had a real problem with his feet. So my father took off his father's shoes and began to massage his feet. My grandfather, even less prone to expressing feelings than my father, said, "That really feels good, Waldo. I don't know why you would do that for me." My father responded, "Dad, I don't mind doing this. I love you." And as he told us this story, my father began to cry. I knew that a great barrier had been crossed between my father and his father. And in his broken voice narration of that day at his father's feet, my father invited me into a better world. We are rushing through the season of Advent, and it has assumed such rushed and frenetic pace that we barely hear the shouts of warning, and we scarcely have time to untie our own shoes, much less untie the thong of the Messiah's sandals. But John the Baptist confessed unworthy and not busy as the reason for his reluctance to stoop to the feet of the coming one. He certainly is busy. He stands at the edge of the wilderness, spitting out the promise of the way of the Lord and urging people to walk into the river to be baptized. By all accounts, many people responded. Many people listened and turned and prepared. And they took off their own sandals and waded in the river to come to John. By pointing to the surpassing worth of the one who comes after him, John can avoid untying his sandals, but for how long? And I have been wondering what it's like to untie the sandals of the Messiah. I wonder how I would know whose sandals to untie. I wonder why in this season of great hymns, magnificent Bible readings, even in our compressed environment, warm gatherings, comforting Salvation Army bell ringers, and busy gift buying. I wonder why, with all of that going on, untying sandals looms as out of the story as the paradigm for getting ready for the Lord. In John's day, untying sandals was the work of slaves or servants. It was menial of menial, and not much has changed. Is there a sharper image of servitude than a boy on his knees shining shoes for a few pennies? Why are podiatrists the butt of so many jokes? And why is the visit of the podiatrist to the nursing home so welcomed and so anticipated? For a long time, I thought John was strangely modest, and John was not modest most of the time. I thought John was strangely modest in his refusal to touch the Messiah's sandals. Surely he could rise at least to the level of slave for the sake of the one who is to come. But then I realized how difficult it is for us even to touch the sandals of the Messiah, even to touch the feet of the anointed of the Lord, even to notice the feet of the one who bears good news of God's mercy and forgiveness. We began this season gazing at the heavens. Remember last week, dazzled by the Son of Man coming in clouds with great power and glory. It's that kind of season. We like to look up. We are urged to look up. We're already looking forward to a night of glory and splendor on Christmas Eve. But before then, we have to look for the sandals of the Messiah, and somebody has to untie them. I don't know why, but I believe that somehow the feet will bring us salvation. One Easter, I caught a glimpse of those sandals, or maybe shoes, but then most of we now wear shoes. The bishop had ordered us to take the day after Easter off. And since I always obey the bishop, at least when he says that, I stayed home on that Monday, only going to my office down the street to pick up a few things. Just as I was leaving with the books I had come for, the intercom buzzed. Someone in the office announced, "There's a man out here who seems to need some help." I went out into the hall to encounter a frail man in his late 50s wearing a black trench coat, just taking a drink of water from the water fountain. He hadn't shaved in several days, and he seemed to walk gingerly. Whatever vigor had once propelled this man through life was now just a whimper, and he said he was trying to get to the nearest homeless shelter. Could I give him a couple of dollars? Fumbling in my pocket, I gave him exactly a couple of dollars, which was all I had, and turned to go home on my day off. He started out the back door of the building, and then he came back and asked, "Do you have any shoes here?" Reaching down, he pulled back the soft cloth slippers he was wearing, hitchhiking on nearly bare feet. "No," I responded, "we don't have any shoes here. I'm sorry." And I thought I had avoided having to notice his aching feet. But later that day, I drove along a highway to pick up my wife at her commuter bus stop. I was late, and as I turned at one intersection, there was the man with no shoes. Hobbling a little, having hitched a ride that far, still far from the shelter. I did not stop, I must confess. I was late for my wife. But to this day, I'm troubled that I did not stop. My modern mind and fear probably constricted me. I don't know. But I saw him. And I see him. I still see him many years later. And I see his feet gingerly walking wherever he goes. And I shake inside and wonder, who will untie the Messiah's sandals and give rest to his feet? In the dreadful and savage culture of American slavery, slaves were generally not allowed to wear shoes. Long before Nike and Reebok, shoes made people important. But slaves could not have shoes. So slaves would sing in the cryptic and liberating way they had of singing, "I've got shoes, you've got shoes. All God's children got shoes. When I get to heaven, I'm going to put on my shoes. I'm going to walk all over God's heaven." For my grandfather, relief, dignity, love, and respect came with the loosening of his shoes and the relaxing massage of my father. The slaves had gone too long barefoot. John the Baptist was anxious about untying the thongs of the Messiah's sandals. But in any guise, this is a day of feet. Unless we marvel too long at a sky full of angels, remember the promise we will hear on Christmas Day. How beautiful upon the mountains are the feet of the messenger who announces peace. Are you worthy to untie the Messiah's sandals? John has left that task to us. He felt unworthy, but somewhere the thongs are too tight and the feet are sore and the world awaits. Amen.